convenient. Good morning. We will call the December 20th, 2023 meeting of the Board of Directors of the Eastern Municipal Water District to order. If you could all stand and join me as we pledge allegiance to our flag. Ready, begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. If I could ask the board secretary to read the suggestions for virtual participation in our meeting and then call the roll of the board and legal counsel.
Absolutely. To avoid creating acoustic feedback, please mute all your devices during the meeting unless you are speaking. Before speaking, please unmute your device and turn down the volume of any other devices that are near you and tuned into the meeting. If you have joined by phone and would like to comment on an item, please press star 9 to let our staff know and wait to be notified. When it is your turn to speak, you will hear a notification asking you to unmute your phone by pressing star 6. If you have joined by computer, you may use the chat feature in Zoom to indicate your desire to speak. When done speaking, please mute your device again. And please participate from a quiet environment so that the board may hear you when you are speaking. And now we'll do roll call. President Pauly.
Present.
Director Crona.
Here.
Director Slauson.
Here.
Director Record.
Here.
Our legal counsel is present. And just to note, Director Armstrong is absent.
Very good. Thank you very much. April, do we have anybody wishing to do public comment on items not on the agenda this morning?
Not that I'm aware of.
Thank you very much. We'll move on to our executive reports. Mr. Mawad.
Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. My report is included in your packet. Under new and ongoing items, as the board is aware, during the COVID pandemic, the state had established the California Water and Wastewater Arrearages Payment Program. They budgeted initially $985 million that was available to water and wastewater agencies to address customer arrearages. EMWD had previously submitted for funding from that program, and we were successful in receiving a total of $5.4 million that was credited to our customers' delinquent accounts. Recently, in July of this year, Governor Newsom signed an extension for the qualifying period, for the COVID qualifying period, and that deadline extended from June 16th of 2021 till December 31st, 2022. Due to the extension, our team went back and evaluated the accounts that were delinquent or were under payment programs. And this week, we put together an application to the state requesting an additional $1.78 million to address additional arrearages that were realized during that extended period of time. Also, in addition to the customer arrearages, the $1.78 million covers our expenditures under the Help to Others program that our customers benefited from. We anticipate that the state will release the additional funds sometime early next year. Just want to acknowledge the work that our team did in putting together this additional application in a very quick manner, and specifically Charles Cameroo and Christy Mincy and others just did an incredible job and appreciate all their efforts. Next item, I wanted to update the board that on December 8th, EMWD, along with the Inland Empire Utilities Agency, Western Municipal Water District, MODOC, and the City of Fullerton, joined in a comment letter to Metropolitan's Task Force Chair on the proposed Climate Adaptation Master Plan for Water. The letter was very well laid out in terms of our feedback to the process, and we proposed to condense the evaluation criteria that will be used as part of that framework to evaluate and consider future investments by Metropolitan to address climate change. Our proposal included a reduction of the evaluation criteria from 10 to 5, as identified in my report. Now, yesterday, Dr. Armstrong and I did attend the task force meeting at Metropolitan, and we learned that many of our suggestions that were included in our comment letter were, in fact, incorporated into the revised evaluation criteria. So it appears that things are moving forward in a very efficient manner with this process. The next subject that we're going to be tackling is the time-based targets that Metropolitan is going to be identifying through the task force, meaning what are the gaps, What are the additional storage, conveyance, supply, conservation targets that they want to achieve, and in what time horizons? As the task force work progresses, we will continue to update the board accordingly. Under items of interest to the board, last week I had the opportunity to participate and attend the Colorado River Water Users Association conference. Had an opportunity to meet with many of our federal, state, and regional partners. In particular, had a chance to meet with the Pechanga tribe representatives, and we discussed the extension of service area agreement that was reached under the settlement between the federal government, Pechanga, and of course, as you know, we're party along with the Rancho California Water District to that agreement. It was a good discussion about the additional long-term water that they will need to support the reservation. In addition, we discussed their housing project for tribal members and the need for us to work with them on sewering of the proposed facilities. In addition to Pechanga, I had the opportunity to meet with the general managers of Metropolitan Water District and the San Diego County Water Authority, and we discussed issues of mutual interest. On December 19th, I, along with the general manager from Western, presented to the Monday morning group, and it was a good presentation that addressed legislative priorities both on the state and federal front. The Monday morning group representatives will be holding their advocacy trips in D.C. and Sacramento early next year, and it was an opportune time to provide them with our perspective on water issues and regulations. Finally, I wanted to note that on December 7th, President Pauly and I had the opportunity to meet with the president of the OCWD board, Kathy Green, as well as their general manager, along with the president of Western Municipal Water District Board and their general manager. The discussion revolved around collaboration to address PFAS regulations within the watershed and the relationship between the upper watershed agencies, including Eastern, Western, and OCWD. It was a really good discussion. It was a very frank discussion, and the president of OCWD's board, Kathy Green, committed to taking our perspective and what she heard from us back to her entire board. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. Oh, and before I conclude, I want to note this is our final board meeting of the calendar year, and on behalf of our entire team, I wanted to wish the Board of Directors Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. You've been incredibly steadfast in your support of our efforts over the past year, and we very much appreciate it. With that, be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for the General Manager? Okay. Thank you very much, Joe. Appreciate the holiday greetings. Laura, anything for us this morning?
Nothing other than happy holidays.
Nick?
Just one quick item. I wanted to let you know that recently the Kaweah tribe reached out to us. As you're aware, we've been talking with them on and off associated with their proposed water service pipeline that they're looking to implement, about a 22-mile pipeline that will run from an EM21 connection to their tribal lands, and they recently reached out to us. We have implemented an MOU that would allow us to support and engage with them as necessary. They will cover our time and expense associated with any effort that we need to put in, and their engineers have reached out because they're now moving forward with some early design associated with their project. So I just wanted to let you know we'll be having those conversations as their project evolves. We'll be sharing that with the board.
Thank you for that. You must have something.
No, I'm just kidding. Okay. Good morning, President Pauly and members of the board. As we close out 2023, we have several retirements this year, two of which are from our executive leadership team that I want to acknowledge this morning. Corey Wallace has served as EMWD's Director of Development Services for the past 5 years. Corey has the best story, really almost Cinderella in nature. Corey started at EMWD as a clerk one in the mailroom. He advanced to storekeeper and then to engineering technician, and then before getting his degree and his professional engineer's license, degree and engineer's license, he advanced through various positions in our engineering track. Interesting fact about Corey, he's the only professional engineer that I know that actually got his license before he finished his degree. Corey's 23 years here at EMWD were interrupted by a brief hiatus at Rancho Water, but we won't hold that against him. When Corey first started at EMWD, communities in our service area were barely on the map. Our community's population was about 350,000 compared to today, nearly a million. He has been instrumental in EMWD adapting to the changing landscape and our growing and developing service area. Corey's dedication and leadership will be greatly missed, but we wish him all the best as he enters this new chapter. And with that, I'd like to ask Corey if he'd like to say a few words.
Good morning. I don't think I'm as good looking as Cinderella. That is a story. It is true. I guess I just first wanted to just extend my appreciation to the board and to the executive team. Really, it's about investing in staff, and Eastern does that. And I was a recipient of the scholarship when that was something that was offered. So, it really helped get my financial part of getting a degree, as well as just being able to attend classes and things and still manage a full-time job. So that was a big deal. Also, Eastern does provide lots of opportunities for people to have a meaningful career, and I feel like that is definitely something that I'm proud of for myself and lots of other people. There's examples of it in this room. I'm very very much appreciate being a trusted to lead staff here at EMWD and to represent EMWD in the community. And like Linnea said, there's been a lot of changes since 1989. I had a stack of things, a lot of three-part forms with carbon copy. That doesn't exist anymore. We got our own mascots and they're social media stars, which is definitely a big change from 1989. And then I guess just kind of on a more serious note, it's very exciting to be part of the paradigm shift, that's happened since then. It used to be, just rely on imported water. That's going to solve the problem, and people wanted big lots and green grass. And I think that, the community has acknowledged, that's not the best way to sustain the water supply. And, so they've embraced that. And, it's really exciting to be at EMWD as an industry leader in just the investments and local supplies, energy independence, resilience. And just in closing, Lenny asked, what was kind of a big project that you're proud of, and it took me a while to think about it because I've worked on a lot of things here. And probably the biggest one that I could think of that is a landmark is DVL. And I know it wasn't Eastern's project, but I was very involved in that project as it was implemented. I was on the engineering team, coordinating facility relocations, for the inland feeder. There used to be houses and facilities under the lake, and coordinating with MWD staff. And actually, I just a couple of weeks ago realized that I think it was Camyar at MWD is still there, and he was one that I had worked with a lot. So just I'm very thankful. Appreciate it.
Corey, can I ask you to come up for one sec? I got a question for you, okay? As a person who started here in an entry-level position and is leaving as a senior person, what advice would you give to someone who just started here at Eastern in one of those entry-level positions?
Oh, that's a good one.
Because you're the example of it.
I guess the one thing is it didn't really matter, I guess, what my title was. I just wanted to do more. And, as far as that, this is a career that there is opportunities for growth and just be ready, I guess, for the next thing. Because you never know when it might come up. When I came back to Eastern, I was in management at Rancho, and I came back as a staff person. I didn't think I'd finish my career here as an executive person, but, when there was a retirement that happened, I didn't expect it. And, you know, I was ready for it and was real excited about it. So I guess just that would be the advice, is just be ready for opportunities and don't be afraid to take some risks.
Ah, great advice. Thank you.
All right. Next, on December 19th, 1988, NASA unveiled plans for a lunar colony and a manned mission to Mars. But more notably, Al Javier started his career here at EMWD. And after 35 years, to the day yesterday, Al is bidding us farewell. Al also came up through the ranks, starting his career as a lab technician, promoting up to biologist, senior environmental analyst, ERC manager, before being selected in 2018 to be the director of environmental and regulatory compliance. To further put Al's tenure in perspective, when Al first started, our wastewater treatment plants discharged to local sites, partnering with our ag community. Al saw the transition of those facilities from local disposal to a permitted discharge to Temescal Creek, only when needed. This was a huge regulatory lift, and Al's contribution to its success was invaluable. Al also single-handedly ensured that ERC had access to four-wheel drive vehicles, having gotten district vehicles stuck 7 times in 2 years. But in all seriousness, Al has been a valued and trusted member of the executive team, and his partnerships both internally and within the regulatory community have contributed to EMWD's exemplary water quality and environmental protection record. Congratulations, Al, on your retirement, and I'd also like invite Al to say a few words.
First, I'd like to thank EMWD as a whole, board, executive, and all the staffers. I mean, it's a great opportunity to work here. As you see in my career, I started low and climbed up. And it was those opportunities that was there and presented, and you have to go for those when they're opportunity. One of the questions you ask is, you know, what advice do you have? One was a learning one. Was when the manager position for the lab was open, I competed against Ken Marshall on that position. I only had a grade 3 certificate, but Ken had a grade 4, and I think that was the difference on there. So being prepared for your next position needs to be crucial about that. One of the things that advice that I had when I was talking to staff for the last time, because that was one of the questions they asked to me, was what advice would I give? Is every day is your day of application for your next job. What you do every day is an application of your next job, because what you do, you need to exemplify yourself to the next position. You need to prepare yourself for the next position. For the position of executive, I took the opportunity of getting my master's in public administration, knowing that Jane would be leaving eventually, and she did. And so I had the opportunity and tried to position myself for the next position. Speaking of the director of environmental regulatory compliance, I was on the fence of whether or not to prepare, even though I was prepared. But I have to give credit to my wife, Laura. She's sitting in the crowd. I would say she forced me. But it was a good opportunity, a good learning experience. As I leave, one of the things I do mention to everyone is I've been here a long time, 35 years, and it's a second home. And that's how I feel it, staff and everyone else. And with that, I thank you.
So both Corey and Al are ready to pass the torch, and I am pleased to introduce new members of our executive team. First, Anthony Budichin has been selected as EMWD's new Director of Environmental and Regulatory Compliance. Anthony most recently served as the Environmental and Regulatory Compliance Manager at Western Municipal Water District. Anthony also started his career as a laboratory technician and has held positions as water quality supervisor and regulatory analyst. Anthony has a bachelor's in environmental science with an emphasis on toxicology and a master's degree in environmental sciences. He holds water treatment and distribution operator grade 2 certifications from the State Water Resources Control Board and is a certified cross-connection specialist through the American Water Works Association. I'd like to invite Anthony to say a few words.
Thank you. I'm going to keep this brief. Really excited to work for Eastern. This is a dream come true, and filling in some big shoes with Al here, but I'll do it. So look forward to working with you.
Welcome.
And I'm also pleased to introduce Armando Arroyo as being selected to succeed Corey Wallace as EMWD's new Director of Development Services. Armando has nearly 28 years of experience, with the majority of that time being here at EMWD. For the past 20 years, Armando has filled various engineering positions within EMWD's Capital Improvement Program, as well as Development Services. And since 2012, he has served as Development Services Principal Engineer, responsible for overseeing the conditioning, design, construction administration, and closeout of developer-driven projects. Armando holds a Bachelor of Science in Civil Engineering and also a Bachelor of Arts in Spanish Literature. Armando is a licensed professional engineer, and I'd also like to welcome Armando to say a few words.
I'd like to thank the district for giving me this opportunity. Very welcome opportunity. I expect to make great changes to the department and, really for the better. Corey has been a tremendous mentor to me and really want to continue his momentum, in the future. I'm hoping that I can work, closely with all the department directors, with senior executive staff, and with the board of directors as well. Thanks again for the opportunity.
Thank you.
So again, thank you very much. Congratulations to our retirees and welcome to our new executive members. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Matt, can you top that?
Absolutely not, no. But I could mention that we did finish pre-deliveries for 2024. And Grant Avenue is prepared for wet weather. We do anticipate letting any flows that come down this week to go by, just wait for it to for the water to clear up. But we're all ready, and next meeting I'll have final numbers for you on recharge activities for the year. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. That will take us to item 3 this morning, which is our consent calendar. Do any members of the board want a separate vote on any items or questions?
I'd make the
Director Slauson, would you like to make the motion?
So moved.
Director Corona will second the motion. Make it a roll call vote, please, on the consent calendar.
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
That passes 4-0 with Director Armstrong absent. Move us on to item 4, which is our action calendar. Item 4A is to receive and accept the annual comprehensive financial report, the single audit report on expenditure of federal awards and assessment districts number 5, 7, 8, and 12, financial statements to the Eastern Municipal Water District for the fiscal year ended June 30th, 2023. Good morning.
Morning. Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. This morning, District Auditors, LSL, are here to present the fiscal year 2023 financial statement and single audits. Included in their presentation this morning is a discussion of the implementation of GASB Statement 96, which is a requirement to report information technology subscription arrangements as assets with their corresponding subscription liabilities on our financial statements. Before the presentation of LSL, we would like to take this time to thank the Finance Department staff for their work on this GASB implementation, along with the IT staff, and also their work on the audit and the timely completion of the annual comprehensive financial report. Thank you also to PG&E staff for their work on the compilation of the report. And with this, we welcome Brian Gruber, Audit Engagement Partner from LSL, for his presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. Please. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you very much, Wilma. Again, my name is Brian Gruber, partner with LSL CPAs, the independent auditor for the district. There we go. Just to provide an overview of the scope of services that we performed for the district this past year, included a financial statement audit for the year ended June 30, 2023. We conducted our audit in accordance with generally accepted auditing standards and also governmental auditing standards, and have performed our audit engagement over the district, EMWD, as well as the assessment districts. We also, our engagement also covered scope of services for a single audit of the district's federal award programs for the year ended June 30, 2023, in accordance with federal uniform guidance. And lastly, issued our report an agreed-upon procedures engagement over the calculations associated with the annual GAN or appropriation limit. Provide a high-level overview of the process. We visit the district a couple times a year, once during the fiscal year before June 30th, to take a look at the district's internal controls and processes and begin planning stages of our audit. We assess risks over various financial transaction cycles and ultimately plan our engagement for when we come back after the district has closed out its books and records for June 30, 2023. That field work occurred in the month of August, where, I mean, ultimately we performed some detailed account testing, confirmed accounts and balances to make sure that the amounts and the balances being reported in the financial statement are being properly presented. In addition, we also performed some testing of compliance with the district's compliance with laws and regulations, grant agreements, and contracts. We performed the single audit testing over the federal award program and other procedures, you know, as we consider necessary part of the process. The results of our audit ultimately are communicated through an independent auditor's report. We express what's referred to as an unmodified opinion on the financial statements, which is the opinion that you seek to receive in a financial statement audit. And on a high level, it means that the information is accurate, reliable, can be relied on by readers of the financial statement, that it's accurate in with all material respects and in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles. We've also issued our report on internal control and compliance, which is a requirement under governmental auditing standards. There were no deficiencies noted in internal control or any non-compliance matters noted. Over the district's federal award programs, we also issued an unmodified opinion that the district is in compliance with the terms and conditions of the major federal award programs. And also, you know, as part of our audit engagement, there were no going concern doubts for the organization, no instances of fraud, waste, or abuse identified during the audit process. Something also important as we're conducting our audit process, if we have any difficulties, challenges with staff interaction, failure to provide information, disagreement regarding accounting principle procedure, we would want to report that to you. We don't have any of those instances. And we also evaluated certain estimates that the district has prepared, and all of those were reasonable in accordance from our audit. As Wilma alluded to, one of the big changes this year from an accounting and financial reporting perspective was the implementation of new GASB, Governmental Accounting Standards Board Statement 96, which the district began to report its responsibilities for subscription-based IT arrangements. The effects on the financial statement include additional footnote disclosure, along with the recognition on the balance sheet of a subscription asset and a related subscription liability to be recognized and start to track and record that. With that, I'm available for any questions that you might have. Thank you.
Questions, Director Slauson?
Not so much a question, but you use the term unmodified opinion.
Yeah.
Is that the same as an unqualified opinion?
Yeah, about 3 or 4 years ago, the terminology was updated, and categories of an unqualified is an unmodified opinion. Yeah.
Okay, because unqualified sort of sounds like the firm is unqualified.
we use funny terminology. I agree.
Okay.
But that is what you want to achieve.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions?
No. I'll move the item.
Moved by Director Record.
One second.
Second by Director Corona. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
That passes 4-0 with Director Armstrong absent. Thank you very much for being here today. We will now move on to item B, which is to approve and authorize an agreement with the Hinmant San Jacinto Watermaster to perform monitoring program services for calendar year 2024 with an appropriation of $250,000. Gordon, the floor is yours, sir.
Morning, President Pauly, members of the board. Tom Henderson couldn't be available today, so you're going to be getting the store brand version of this presentation from me instead.
Which I'd rather have.
Well, thank you. We're here to discuss the groundwater monitoring program in the Hemet-San Jacinto area. Starting off, high level with some background, this map shows how the San Jacinto groundwater basin is currently being administered. So we have the western portion, which is in that light blue. That's where EMWD is, the Groundwater Sustainability Agency. And then you have the east side in that hatched yellow pattern, which is adjudicated under the Hemet-San Jacinto Watermaster. And that's the portion that we're going to be focusing on for today's presentation. Just as a side note, I just want to remind everybody that EMWD has been involved in the monitoring of this basin for quite some time, actually predating both SGMA and the formation of the Hemet-San Jacinto Watermaster. So this is something that has just been an ongoing thing literally for decades. And but we are focusing on the Watermaster area today, and what I have for your consideration are going to be the monitoring activities that we're doing out there. Before we go into it, just want to remind everybody that this is going to be reimbursed by the Watermaster. So exactly what the monitoring program entails is it involves about 200 wells that are out in that area, not counting what gets reported to us by other participants. And there's a fair amount of field work. It's actually the majority of the groundwater monitoring. So this involves things like setting up a temporary pump to go down into a well with an open casing to get a water quality sample. You see other examples listed on this slide, measuring water levels in the wells. There are some office-based tasks. I mentioned that we collect and manage data that are reported by other agencies. There's also an annual report that gets prepared for the Watermaster. And this information is used by the Watermaster to make management decisions for the adjudicated area. As an example, some of this information gets put into a tool that the Watermaster uses to estimate the amount of water that's in storage and available to be pumped out there. EMWD also uses this information. This is important data that goes into our groundwater model. So it's definitely a mutually beneficial arrangement for us to be doing this monitoring. And so this slide just is an overview of the estimated budget that this monitoring program is going to be expending. As I mentioned earlier, you can see here the majority of the costs are going to be for tasks related to the collection of field data. And so with that, I'd like to bring for your consideration a recommendation to authorize an agreement with the Hemet-San Jacinto Watermaster to perform the monitoring program services. And again, these costs will be reimbursed by the Watermaster. And with that, I would be happy to take your questions.
Any questions?
I have a question.
Yeah.
This, I guess it's kind of a weird kind of a question, but so I was looking at the map there.
Mm-hmm.
So the creation of Diamond Valley Lake diverted water that ultimately would have gone into the Santa Margarita Basin and then shifted it up to the north. And Have you seen any changes in groundwater levels on the northern end? I guess I would say on the like northeastern, northwestern end after that change in where the water went. Because Diamond Valley Lake, as you know it, they put concrete all the way down, and then what water used to go towards Temecula now goes towards Canyon Lake.
Yeah, that's not something that I unfortunately can speak to off the top of my head, but it's certainly something that we could take a look at.
So, Dr. Corona, what I can offer you is that, as you're aware, when DVL was constructed by Metropolitan, at the time there were arrangements and agreements reached with the adjacent property owners around DVL relative to the groundwater that, or I should say at the time it was surface water before construction of DVL. So those arrangements that we are also party to, where we are providing those properties immediately west of DVL with water, those still exist and those still continue to this day. But to your point, as far as further downstream, all the way down to Temecula, whether there's been any monitored changes in the groundwater conditions.
I was talking about the northern end. I obviously nothing's going to come down,
right?
You know, once the dam went in. But if there was any changes to the northern,
I see, to the north side of DVL,
yeah.
We have not noticed any within the scope of work that we monitor. Now, whether it's beyond the scope of monitoring or beyond our territory, that could be another issue. But what we've monitored, we have not noticed any type of significant changes as a result of DVL.
Okay. I'll move the ad.
Moved by Director Corona. Second by Director Slauson. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Beckard?
Aye.
It's 4-0 with Director Armstrong absent. Thank you, Gordon. Great presentation as always. Item C is to approve and authorize a 4-year agreement with Pest Options Incorporated in the full term not to exceed $1.5 million for herbicidal application, weed abatement, and minor landscaping services. Mr. Howell.
Thank you, President Pauly, members of the board. And before I begin, I'd like to introduce Matt Kuhn with Pest Options. He's here.
Thank you for being here, sir.
The contract recommendations. Thank you, Matt. So as mentioned, this recommendation is to approve and authorize a 4-year agreement with Pest Options in the not to exceed total of $1.55 million. They provide herbicide application, weed abatement, and minor landscape services throughout the district. So in September of this year, 3 proposals were received under Request for Proposals 3640. Pest Options of Anaheim provided the highest scoring response. This is a fairly large contract, so services are performed at 257 locations throughout the district, including that herbicide application, weed abatement, the application of pre- and post-emergent debris clearing, tree trimming, and multiple other facility upkeep assignments. So the contractors are responsible for monitoring and maintaining their assigned facilities, and they're then inspected on a scheduled basis by our staff, who we have contract quality assurance inspectors that will evaluate the work according to specifications. So as mentioned, Pest Options provided the highest scoring and the second lowest cost proposal. Their Pest Options scores in qualifications and experience, their work plan and achieving performance, the scheduling offered, and the lack of contractual exceptions, it far exceeded other respondents to the solicitation. Interestingly, previous assignments, previous contracts were spread over multiple contractors, so those 200 and some odd locations were divided amongst 3 contractors in our previous term. However, over the past 2 terms, Pest Options was called upon to provide support and backup to those other contractors that were unable to maintain performance at their assigned facilities. And accordingly, in 2022, Pest Options received our supplier recognition of the award, which the board presented at that time. So expenditures against the contract over the past year for services were $337,000, and first-year expenditures under this recommended term are estimated at $369,000, which includes the addition of 6 facilities to the contract.
So with that, it is recommended that the board approve and authorize a four-year agreement with Pest Options in the amount of $1.55 million, and that includes provisions for up to a 3% annual increase in years 2 through 4 of the contract term. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions on this?
I have another weird question to ask. So at our solar sites, I know there are very few weeds. Do we put a pre-emergent down on that?
Or correct.
Do we come in?
Correct. And that is part of the locations that are inspected regularly to make sure that the debris under the solar panels is not growing.
Okay. Well, yes. It's pre-emergent or it's you're coming in with Roundup and getting it afterwards?
I believe it's pre-emergent.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I had a technical question, but just out of curiosity, with an ever-changing environment on what we spray to kill things, or we are always in environmental compliance, et cetera?
Correct. So there are a list of products that are required to be presented that will be applied to our various properties. That's reviewed prior to the contract with Safety and Risk Management. There's a pre-contract meeting with Safety and Risk Management where those chemicals are reviewed, and then on an annual basis that continues.
Okay. I kind of figured so, but all
right. Any restricted use materials used?
I don't recall, Director Recker, if we prescribe items that cannot be used, but I can look into that.
No, I mean as far as the county is concerned, we got Commissioner
restricted
materials,
use chemicals.
I mean, I'm sure,
Matt,
if you want to come up and address that, come on up if you don't mind.
Everything's permitted and licensed, and we report directly to the Ag Commissioner
right. For
every county we work in. Yeah.
But do you use any restricted use materials? No? Thank you.
Thank you. All right, I'll look for any other questions. I'll look for a motion. Would you like to make the motion, Director Record?
I'll move it.
You'll move it. Second. Dave Slauson, second it. Megan, roll call vote, please.
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
That passes 4-0. Director Armstrong absent. Thank you, sir, for being here. Appreciate it. All right. We will move on now to item 5, which is the informational and presentation items on our agenda this morning. We're going to start with Mr. Adams and a financial operating capital highlights through the first quarter of the fiscal year.
All right. Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. Today's informational item is the results on the first quarter financials and highlights on the capital improvement program. Just as the board is aware, the current two-year budget was approved by the board back in June, and that budget did include some significant cost increases to the district. As you are aware, we did adopt rates to adjust as far as being effective in January to help pay for some of those costs, but in addition to trying to mitigate those impacts, we did plan to use reserve. So this first quarter report is just really to give you an update on where we currently stand within the first 3 months of the fiscal year. As you'll see, certainly good results, but we are monitoring our financial performance going forward. So let me go to the next slide. So certainly the outline is very similar to past quarterly reports. I'm going to provide a brief highlight on the consolidated enterprise, which is our top level. Briefly cover the operating services, both water, wastewater, and recycled water, and other statistics, including reserves and connection fees. I have a slide on our capital program as far as spent to date and also OFA, and then I'll provide a summary. Come on. All right, so consolidated enterprise. So as you can see here, consolidated revenue slightly under budget, less than 1%, with expenses, and you'll see a little over 12% below budget. Where the focus is in operating revenues. Operating revenues are 10% below projections, and you'll see that's really from lower water sales, and also operating expenses are similarly under budget at 13.7. Again, with the lower water sales, we have lower water purchases. What is keeping consolidated revenues close to budget overall is the non-operating revenues. We highlight the connection fees are 43% higher. You'll see that growth and the connection fees very consistent with prior years. Also, with the rate hikes that have happened, Interest income is significantly higher than our initial projections. I want to note late fees, $1.3 million in the first quarter, and that is over budget. And then with, as Matt had mentioned, the recharge, the O&M assessments that we have done on the other agencies for the Saboba recharge, $1.1 million in revenue as well. Overall, net margin is just slightly under $1 million, but higher than budget because we anticipated using reserves. Ultimately, we use reserves to fund our capital program. So with that, here's the schedule. I mentioned the 10% you can see at the top line. In operating revenues, you can certainly see the increase, the 43% for connection fees and interest earnings. Overall, just 0.1% under our projections overall. Going to operating expenses, you can see that 13.7%. But overall, other expenses are under budget, resulting in 12.5. Just sort of scrolling down, you can see the net margin of $494,000 with operating fixed assets at 2.3 and capital at $25 million. We did use reserves in addition to that net margin. You know, one of the things I want to highlight is the pension trust. We did make a contribution in the first quarter of $15 million, and that was, you know, really 60% of that use of reserves. Next slide. So jumping into water and just really briefly, certainly mentioned the lower water sales, 4,000 acre feet below budget. Actually, it was only 4% less than prior year. That does impact revenues. Revenues are lower, $9.7 million in revenues. But with that, purchase costs of water was down and overall 8.5% less. To the right, you can just see you know, where domestic water sales were down. Also, the ag with the wet winter and Lake Kemet being filled up. Lake Kemet did not purchase any water in the first quarter of this year. Just quickly, you can see that overall 16.2% down. We look at total revenues. Just looking at the highlights there, domestic demand is up 4.5%. This is really to do with the fixed charge and the increase in connections. When you look at prior year, it's 10% higher, so the growth plus the adjustments on fees. And you look at domestic water, that it's 3.8% less than prior year, but 21% less than budget. And then operating expenses, just at 15.7. You can see purchase water, the number one item, 24% less than budget. This graph just shows you where water sales and purchases are. The bars are the purchases, and the sales are the lines. Certainly, our purchases in 2024 are very similar to 2023, and sales, though, are down a little, as you can see on the revenue side. We'll track this for the year and then report to the board in the fourth quarter. Here, wastewater. Wastewater is very tight. When you look at certainly the treatment flows, 48, so under the 49 that was anticipated, but look at revenues, $0.4 million above budget, 1.3%. Total operating costs, $2.2 million under, 9.7. This was an area that we had some significant cost increases. So, you know, even though we're below budget, it is higher than prior year. Looking at the highlights, collection lift expenses were 20% lower, highlighted labor, chemicals, and outside services. Treatment expenses were really consistent with the budget, but just noting that 25% higher than prior year. And then sludge hauling, when we talk about trying to contain costs and look for savings, operations from an efficiency side certainly improved our costs related to sludge hauling. And then just briefly, you see the 1.3% revenues over budget, 1.4 on the service, outside sewer service was 0.6, and then dump stations was 12%, but very tight there. And then you're looking at the operating expenses, overall 9.7. The one area, you can see the energy is one of the lower ones. We had some significant increases, but that did come under budget. When you compare that to prior year, very close in the same amount of expenses. Recycled water, for the first quarter, we have 12,355 acre feet sold. This was above budget, but lower than prior year. Revenue was down a slight $400,000. But operating expenses were also down $200,000. Overall, there was operating net income was a little lower than we actually anticipated. You can see the variances there. Transmission expenses was about $100,000 below budget, and energy expenses above because of the
the larger storage volumes. Here's the numbers, 7.5% revenues for recycled water, only 3.8% less than prior year. And then you look at the operating expenses, 15% over prior year, but 6.7% less in comparison to the budget. So jumping to reserves, this graph the board has seen before. One of the things we did add was the minimum and targets. If you recall, at the last quarterly meeting, the board had asked, what are our minimums or our targets related to reserves? So we put this additional line to show that minimum or target. We always see a decrease in September of every year. We have some debt service payments. We made the pension trust fund payments of $15 million, so you can see that swing of almost $50 million. Just quickly, when you look at that green line, we're certainly significantly higher than where we currently stand. But just to call your attention to the blue, that $440 million, you know, that is money for capital. And so really what has helped us recently is the reserves that we have to fund our capital program, pay as you go. So we, at least in this 2-year budget, don't anticipate any debt issuance because of the cash on hand to fund this capital. So even though we're well above our minimums and targets, a lot of that money is scheduled to be used for our 2-year capital plan. And in this slide, we also put together, based on that request from the board, just to show you the different reserve levels, where the balance is and where the minimum target. Now, this is as of June 30th. Certain reserves we only adjust annually, so we wanted to do a comparison for the fiscal year that just closed. I highlight the minimum targets, the maximum, and then whether they're within range. And the answer is yes on all of them. I did mention the capital reserves. You can see that $440 million compared to the minimum targets at $157 million. Again, that excess reserves are to help fund the capital program for the next 2 years. These are just the reserves that are unrestricted and are board designated. So the board has full discretion on these reserves and can make changes to policy as they feel is needed. Mentioned connection fees. You can see... now, it's maybe a little busy, but there's really three lines. Last are what our budget is, which is the lower line with the red, and then the two lines that are pretty close are last year's and then this year. So sewer is just 3% behind where we were last year. It is 48% above budget, thus the additional revenue. For water, connections are very similar, 1% above last year, but 32%. So certainly the growth that's in our service areas continues and has been pretty consistent over the last 3 years. Then just briefly on capital program, for the first quarter of our $150 million, we have spent just a little over $25 million. None of that was funded from external funding, at least for the first quarter. You can see at the bottom, $21.6 million is anticipated in external funding to fund a portion of that $150 million. But for the first quarter, only $25 million was spent. Overall, $19.4. You can see the categories are all over the place as far as percentages as projects. Different projects are progressing at different paces. And then operating fixed assets. Annual budget, $41 million, which includes prior year carryover. Total spent to date is the $2.3 million. But one of the things we added was the total commitment. So you can certainly see in vehicles at $9.2 million, they've only spent right around $700,000, but have orders and commitments of almost $6.3 million. So total commitments, almost $20 million of that $41 million budget. You can see that 22 has been spent or committed. We're already at 54% committed for the first quarter.
John, could you quickly remind me, do we pay for a vehicle when we get it or when we order it?
When we receive it.
Well, okay.
And, okay. Yeah, inspect it. So, yeah, what a purchase orders are given, which is our commitment to purchase it.
Yeah, but then, cash ticks, so that number is always behind.
Yeah, and usually deliveries happen, we inspect it, and then we pay out once we confirm
and
it meets specs.
And with the supply chain issues, it's been longer than usual.
Okay, thank you.
So just last slide, summary, you know, we continue to monitor fiscal performance for the district, but at least for the first quarter, revenues just slightly under target. Again, I talked about the non-operating revenues. Expenses are 12% under. Water revenue, just based on the sales and purchases, are under. Wastewater, very tight as far as both revenues and expenses. And then recycled water, same thing as far as sales are lower than we anticipated. Connection fees, again, 43% above target. And then overall, you know, the $26 million that we had was really for the capital. And with that, I'm available for any questions.
Any questions on this? I would say well done as usual, sir.
Thank you.
So, thank you. All right. We will go on to item B, which is our Geographic Information System Master Plan. Good morning.
Good morning, President Pauley, members of the board. I'm excited to present an update on the GIS Master Plan. So the GIS Master Plan is basically our marching orders through 2025. An extensive needs assessment and planning process was done to determine the initiatives. We have 37 initiatives with over 200 sub-activities, so there's a lot of work that needs to be accomplished to complete this plan. Thus far, we are 65% complete. You can see a detailed outline of each initiative and how we're tracking through that progress. Our core phases of development within this plan are to develop a strong GIS foundation, strengthen and sustain what we have thus far, and build and extend the GIS system. So here are some highlights of our recent progress. In our foundational phase, we are 80% complete. An enterprise GIS team was formed in the Information Services Department to really serve the district at an enterprise level. We have two of our three positions filled. Our last position is going to be filled on January 2nd. Very excited about that. Our governance library, we're working on this continuously. We're developing things like data quality plans, application specs, really to govern the GIS system. We're 75% complete with that. We have completed our plan server and field maplet upgrades. And in our strengthen and sustain phase, we are 65% complete. We have been working on developing automated data reviewer checks to migrate to the utility network. The utility network is the new GIS data model that we'll need to migrate our water and sewer networks into. This model requires all of our data to be clean before the data can be migrated in. We are continuing on with our EGIS technical and steering committees. That's where we've been able to work with stakeholders and keep them abreast of our latest projects and what we have going on. We also present our annual work plan for the year and allow them the time to approve the projects within so they know what we're working on. In our build and extend phase, we are 60% complete in this phase. This is the area that we've been working on the most, and in the upcoming slides, I'll highlight some of the projects that we've completed. You can see a listing of all of the applications we've deployed since I last provided an update last year. Our goal here really is to look at functions, field functions, operational functions. Where can we help with technology and streamline those? Okay, so here is an example of a sewer line cleaning application that we built for the field staff. And it's a simple data collection form that is really intuitive for the field users to use. And it is integrated with Maximo, our work order system for the district. So based on the selections or conditions that they're entering in out in the field, a work order will be automatically entered. So this is a huge time saver for our field staff. Prior to this, they were having to log the sewer cleaning.
I think everyone enjoyed their break. We will continue on with your presentation. Sorry about that. You're on a roll, so pick it up.
Okay, I'll always remember this presentation after
always
that.
Remember. Me
one
too.
For the books.
Me too.
Okay, so here is another application that we have developed within the last year. This is a GIS integration. It is the CCTV video sewer inspection application. So this application, we are bringing in a lot of the GIS data that we're storing into this application. So the field staff has insights, things like diameter, install date, or cross streets are already stored in the GIS system. So we're integrating this mobile application with the GIS system so the field users don't have to do duplicate data entry. So this application allows the field users to click on a stick of pipe, take the CCTV video, and then rate the pipe based on what they see in the video. So the GIS really brings that insights of where, and everything is accessible by clicking on the GIS data at a later time. They can access the video, they can access the pipe inspection and the scorecard, so it kind of wraps everything nicely together. And here's an application we built for the development services team. It's the project intake exhibit application. It allows for automated map generation. Previously, staff was spending about an hour creating these within the software suite. We built this application, and now it takes them 15 minutes to create these maps. They're able to simply enter the APN of interest. The application automatically highlights and zooms to that area. It titles the map and labels everything per their requirements. So again, another time saver for staff. And this is an up-and-coming application that we're currently working on. It's set to release into production within the next couple months. It's an external-facing capital improvement project viewer. It allows for insights into up-and-coming capital improvement projects for cities, municipalities, and also the public. Users are able to filter the data based on need. So maybe they want to see a specific city of interest in all of the projects that fall within that city. They would simply click on it, and the application would show the projects within that area. They're also able to click on a project of interest, and this nice fact sheet displays with further project details. We've enhanced our dashboarding capabilities. This allows for office insights into field functions. The one we're seeing on the screen is one we built for the sewer collections team. They can see how they're tracking against their weekly target goals. They can also see the rate of inspection this year versus last year at this time. And this was completely customized per their management request. We can also build dashboards with heat maps. The one we're showing on the screen here is our remote services within our area, so we can see the hotspots of the wear for our remote services and also a count. So now I'll roll into an update on the GIS facilities mapping pilot project. This project was really a pilot to assess, you know, what the level of effort would be to start mapping all of the treatment plants within the GIS system. So we're starting on a small area in the Temecula treatment plant. And previously staff, you know, they currently use PDFs on SharePoint, our stick files to research the treatment plant facilities. Our goal is to have all of the records available in GIS mapped in one central location so they can easily click on the pipes or other entities within the treatment plants and get to those plans with ease. We are 75% complete with this project, and you can see a sample of what that GIS data looks like in the system. And again, we're creating data-rich data where we can link to drawings and operation manuals with ease. So here's an overview of some of our up-and-coming activities. In our foundational area, we're going to complete our governance documentation and make it available to all users within SharePoint. We're currently working on our Enterprise GIS 11.1 upgrade. This will allow some enhancements to some of our field applications. We're going to migrate our HydroMapper application, which is the district's main GIS user, to a new and improved platform. And in our strengthen and sustain area, we are going to start working with our field users to develop a robust GPS data quality plan. We'll continue to have our EGIS steering and technical committees. And we're going to also start working on with HR on a training and education plan for the GIS professionals within the district. And in our build and extend phase, I'll just mention a few of the applications. These are the ones we have on deck that we're working on this next year. We're going to start to develop condition assessment applications that look much like the slide that I showed for the sewer line cleaning, simple form-based applications that are integrated with the Maximo work order system. We are currently building out a lead-based piping field verification and customer survey application. And also we're building out a hydrant and vehicle inspection application. And with that, I'll take any questions.
President Pauly, if I could maybe just make a comment, I just want to thank Andy and the entire GIS team. This has been just incredible progress that they've made. These GIS applications that are being implemented are going to provide us significant efficiencies going forward. And as John mentioned earlier, we're still rapidly growing as an organization. So to be able to have these tools, these solutions to streamline our business functions, I think is going to be a significant return on the investment. So just wanted to express my gratitude.
Thank you.
I was just going to say, I work as a surveyor, so I've been in the field for a long time, since my 20s, and now I'm in my 60s. I'm in my 60s, remember that. And the application I never would have imagined. You know, how expansive this could be, how worthwhile it could be. So I appreciate the team. Thank you, Andy.
No, I was going to say, same echo the general manager's comments. This is cool stuff from a novice standpoint, but I'm glad we have someone quarterbacking. I'm also glad the district is putting the effort and resources into making this. Would you say we're probably a leader in the industry on this or close to?
We definitely are being looked at by ESRI, which is the builder of these applications, and also two district staff members, myself and Clay Gordon. We lead the Inland Empire GIS user group, so we're definitely a leader in the industry.
Okay. Always where we want to be. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
We will always remember your presentation today, okay? All right. Great job. Appreciate it.
Set off the alarm.
All right, we will move to item C, which is wind energy evaluation and battery energy storage systems update. I asked for this report a while back simply because I get a lot of questions from people that say, you got all this great solar stuff out at the treatment plants. Why don't you put some windmills up too? So the floor is yours to tell us about windmill possibilities.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you, President Pauly and members of the board, executive staff. And yes, this is an informational update related to President Pauly's question back in July. Have we looked at wind generation recently? It had been looked at several years ago, so now is as good a time as any to take another visit. I'll start with our current self-generation portfolio. Between the phase 1, 2, and 3 solar, we have almost 22 megawatts of installed generation. Microturbines coming in about a half megawatt of generation. And soon for our five battery energy storage systems will be added to this list as soon as we have permission to operate on those as well. Just a little side note, we purchased 112 million kilowatt hours from Southern California Edison in our last fiscal year. So two main types of wind generation. The first is the most common you see on your way to Palm Springs. Most are horizontal axis wind turbines, very tall, large propellers, typically three blades. They range in size from as small as 3 kilowatts to the world's largest, which was recently commissioned at 16 megawatts. They are deployed globally. You see them in the coastal waters, areas like all the way to Palm Springs. They do require a large footprint of unobstructed area to so it doesn't impede the wind flow, and they typically have about a 20-year lifespan. The second, less common, are vertical access wind turbines. You see those typically in smaller sizes, sometimes on rooftops, sometimes out in empty fields. They do range 1 kilowatt up to 3.8 megawatts, which is the largest, which was recently commissioned in Quebec, Canada. They can operate in slightly lower wind conditions. Currently, they're a little bit less efficient than the horizontal access, although that's improving. And they do require less of a footprint for their operation. And they can be installed anywhere a horizontal access can, including rooftops, flat area, and again, about a 20-year lifespan. The next is considering wind speeds in our area. As the map shows, this is from the National Renewable Energy Laboratory. For the most part, covering most of the district, we do have lower average annual wind speeds. There are a few pockets up in the Moreno Valley area around Lake Paris and in the southern Temecula area that do have slightly higher wind speeds, still hover in those just over 10 miles per hour. But for the majority of the district, it's under 6 miles per hour average wind speed throughout the year. A quick look at how do they work. So very, very straightforward. The impeller essentially replaces a generator, if you're looking at gas-powered generation, still turns a rotor inside a stator, generates electricity. An interesting thing to note, wind speed is relative across a percent of capacity of production across all sizes of wind generation. So a 6 mile per hour wind speed, for example, 6 to 9 miles per hour will still only generate 10 to 15% of the capacity of a wind turbine, regardless of its size. Although the larger the wind turbine is, the more energy that 10 to 15% is going to equate to. So whether it's 100 kilowatt or a 1 megawatt, the power production, percentage of power production is relative. Ideal wind speeds to optimize output hover between 22 and 27 miles per hour. So what I've done, we've taken sample economics for the two areas that had the highest wind, localized wind speeds, the Temecula and Moreno Valley, but with different technologies and sizes, horizontal and vertical access, between 500 kilowatts up to 1 megawatt. And ultimately what it shows, because of those lower wind speeds, the savings just aren't there. Factoring in the cost of the equipment, capital costs, any rebates and incentives that could be applied, and then the avoided SCE costs, the savings, they're not quite there. And that's over the 20-year life of the product. This other slide, what I did, what if we did have more ideal wind speed conditions? You can see that at that point, with 22 to 27 miles per hour, wind production is on par with solar production. They're very comparable. And the cost savings is significant, avoided costs. So, in conclusion, considering the lower than ideal wind conditions, the cost of the equipment, it's not a good time to move forward with wind at this time. However, we'll keep our eyes on the technology as efficiencies improve, other environmental factors, and definitely something we can take a look at again in the future. Any questions before I move on?
That's pretty clear.
Yeah, so when you were looking at the location for placing these wind turbines, were you using Eastern Municipal property or where? Because as far as Temecula is concerned, there are places where it is blowing like a son of a gun in the summertime, up along the ridge tops in Deleuze, and then on the backside over by Santa Margarita River. The problem you're going to run into on the ridge is you're going to have trouble getting approvals to put one there.
Absolutely.
They probably would not, because in the summertime, in the afternoon, it's blowing 40 miles an hour going to, you know, dropping down from Duluth down into the Rancho Division there. On the backside by San Margarita River, it's also blowing, not 40, but I mean, even the on the one side, the avocado trees are leaning over because it's blowing all the time.
But, for this, we did look at localized with district properties. It does eliminate several hurdles for installing the equipment, but as you spoke to, putting them outside of areas that we own or land that we own is extremely difficult permitting. And then, you know, neighbors, their opinions on wind turbines. But looking in the map, especially in Temecula area, we do have Temecula treatment plant is in that area that does fall within those higher wind speeds. But what we'd have to look outside to of district-owned property would be purchasing that land, mm-hmm. getting the electrical infrastructure over to that area. It does take quite a there's significant costs there with Southern California Edison to tie into the grid. So for this, we did look at...
Well, down where the treatment plant is, back in the day, there was an airport there.
Okay.
And there's a reason there's not an airport there anymore, because it had a 25-mile-an-hour crosswind every afternoon, and people would fly in from Orange County and end up into the buildings.
Oh, interesting.
So that's when they built French Valley, so it would be right into the wind. But so it does blow there, but not like up above.
Sam, I just want to clarify one point. The exhibit that you're showing up there as far as wind speeds, that's average annual. I think per Dr. Corona's comment, there are going to be seasonal differences. There are going to be peaks, whether in the summer or other times of the year, when those wind speeds do pick up. But from an economic analysis perspective, you use exactly. The annual average throughout the year.
Yes, the annual average. So there are the days where there's no wind, those lulls that counterbalance the higher wind in those afternoons, exactly.
Now, I appreciate it. It's a good exercise, I think, because, again, we get asked questions. I like to tell people, hey, we looked at that. Doesn't work out. Energy is a vital component of what we do here. So, you know, I'm going to be excited about new technologies, battery storage, et cetera, that we can take advantage of in the future, because I don't see our energy costs lessening anytime in the
Agreed.
Several decades. So I appreciate the work you did on that, and not everything is going to pan out, but I like to at least know the facts. So appreciate it very much.
Excellent. My pleasure. All right. So a quick look at our battery energy storage.
Oh, there's more. Okay. Okay.
But wait, there's more. Okay. Ginsu knives.
So just a quick recap. There we go. We do have five battery energy storage systems currently installed. All construction is complete across all five installations, with an expected savings about $2.7 million over the next 15 years. So completed installations, some nice photos of the batteries in place, quite large, 55,000 pounds, about 8 feet tall, 8 feet wide, about 20 feet long. So very large, 2 megawatt hour storage capacity. Expected permission to operate. So I'm happy to report we did receive conditional permission to operate for the Temecula installation. We are expecting Hemet water filtration to fall by the end of this week. We just got confirmation from SCE, if not by early next week. And then the balance will trickle out over the next couple months and through next year. You'll notice Paris Valley is a little further out. SCE determined at a much later date than we had hoped that they needed to install a ground bank. So that allows time for them to install and activate that ground bank for Paris Valley. So potential additional opportunity. Originally, there were supposed to be two battery energy storage devices at Hemet Water Filtration. SCE later determined after initial approval that the second battery didn't qualify for SGIP funds, but we still have those SGIP funds available for another potential installation. So we are looking at San Jacinto RWRF currently. We should know here in the next few months after Tesla has worked through their pricing and we evaluate cost savings on our end, And then if feasible, we're looking to go to the board early next year, quarter one next year, for approval on that project. And with that, any questions on the battery?
So Sam, just to clarify, for the five installations that were completed in terms of construction, we received $5.5 million of SGIP funding?
Yes. So we'll go back here real quick. Yeah, total of $5.5 million. Tesla agreed to assume the payment schedule for the SGIP funds for three of the projects. So those are no out-of-pocket. I'm sorry, for the two of the projects, so no out-of-pocket expenses for the district. Whereas the other three projects, we will wait the 5 years to receive reimbursement through SGIP.
Fronting the cost.
Fronting the cost, yes. Exactly.
Okay. No further questions. Appreciate it very much.
Very good. My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. That will take us to item six today, which is to receive and file various reports. I will make a motion to do so. Director Slauson, sure. You'd like to second that, I'm sure. Make it a roll call vote, please.
President Pauley?
Aye.
Director Groner?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
And that passes 4-0 with Director Armstrong absent. That will bring us to our calendar. Good morning.
Of course I go after someone that's twice my height. Sorry. Good morning, President Pauley, members of the board. This morning I have two events for your review and consideration. And the first one is the Metropolitan Water District Tunnel Boring Machine Naming Ceremony taking place at the March Airfield Museum. And this event is to honor a third grade student at Victoriano Elementary School here in Moreno Valley who was selected for his submission in the naming contest that in which many students from all over Southern California participated or were invited to participate. And that's taking place Thursday, January 25th, 2024. The second event here is the Association of California Water Agencies 2024 conference scheduled for Thursday, February 27th through Tuesday, February 27th through Thursday, February 29th, 2024, and it's taking place in Washington, D.C. And more details and information for these two events are located within your packet as well. Turning to page 2, you'll find a current listing of the board members' master calendar for the next 2 weeks. If you could please review the information and let me know if there are any changes or updates. On top of page 3, you will find the list of upcoming events with participants, and the one event that you will see here is the Urban Water Institute Spring 2024 Conference in Palm Springs, scheduled for Wednesday, February 21st through Friday, February 23rd, 2024. Continuing on page 3 is the board and board committee meetings, which are all on schedule. And on page 4 is the interagency meetings. Again, all those are on schedule as well. Just one board member out of the office is scheduled for Monday, December 25th through Sunday, December 31st. And district office holiday schedule is as follows: December 25th, January 1st, January 15th, February 19th, and EMWD offices are closed on these dates. Are there any questions or comments regarding the calendar?
No? None for me.
Okay,
great. Thank you so
much.
Thank you. Appreciate it. All right. We will now do a director's attendance report. Director Armstrong is not here, so we'll go on to Director Crona.
Okay. We had a Riverside County LAFCO meeting a couple weeks ago. The big item on that agenda was a discussion of changing how the nomination period and the voting period for the elections are held. Originally, the executive director, Gary Thompson, wanted to unilaterally change it himself, and I said, I don't know that you can do that, you know. So it went to the board. We had a discussion on it, and it was ultimately voted to change the time period from 30 days to nomination and 30 days for voting to 60 days on both of them. My argument was that, you know, if they're not going to vote in 30 days, they're not going to vote in 60 days. But anyway, I lost that vote. So that was the big one on that one. And then on Rancho Meeting, they elected their president and vice president, President Rossi and Vice President Brian Brady as the senior officers at Rancho. And that's all I have.
All right, thank you for that. I had, as Joe mentioned, we had a really good meeting discussion, both Western and Orange County Water District on PFAS issues, and I think, as indicated, Kathy Green's going to take some of the information back to her board, and we will hear back from them. But I just thought, again, and no offense to legal counsel, but we sat down with general managers and board presidents and had a very good discussion without lawyers there. So it's always a good time for lawyers, but sometimes you get some stuff done without them too. So appreciate that very much. I was unable to attend both the IE Works meetings. I did have my usual very productive meeting with the general manager. So Director Record?
A meeting with the general manager, I thought it went well.
Mr. Slauson.
Yes, had Wake Up Moreno Valley, our chamber breakfast, presentations by the city and the school district, both Val Verde and Moreno Valley Unified superintendents. And my son is an adult now, but he went to Moreno Valley schools, and I'm in my 60s now, so I'd like to see how things have evolved. At Santa Ana Watershed Project Authority yesterday, we approved the audit report, which supplied us with an unqualified opinion. And we also authorized payment for the landscape architect to prepare and submit some additional plans, or refined plans rather, and to get rebids from the gardener or landscape professional. That's it.
All right. Do we have any director's comments or requests for future agenda items?
I'd like to make a comment in reference to Joe's comment this morning about appreciating the board. And I believe that you get what you give. So this is a really good board, and I really enjoy being a part of it. But staff is excellent, and, you know, your leadership is great. So that's a...
Thank you, Dr.
It's a good relationship.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
I'll just comment. I really appreciate Joe's leadership this morning of letting the board participate in a fire drill.
Yes.
And in all seriousness,
be prepared.
Yes. Also, I want to echo what Director Record said. We have just an amazing staff here, an amazing management, and today's retirements. I mean, I'm sorry to see them glow. I'm you know, that's the life cycle. But we seem to have great people right behind them that are going to come in, and we're probably not going to miss a step. So I realize that doesn't happen by happenstance. It happens with great management, great leadership. And so I totally agree. This is, when you look at a lot of other public agencies, I think this one stands out as an example of what to be. All right.
Thank you, President Paul.
With that, I'll ask legal counsel if we need a closed session today.
President Pauly, we'll be taking closed session in the conference room.
The back room here. And just as a reminder, we are going to have our legislative workshop starting at noon, correct?
That's correct.
All right. We're good? All right. We are back in open session. I am going to ask our attorney if he could report out of closed session.
Sure. The board met in closed session to discuss the item identified as the San Diego Water Quality Authority litigation. The board received a report from staff and district council regarding that matter. No reportable action took place. Mr. President, that concludes the report.
Very good. Thank you. With that, we stand adjourned until January 3rd, 2024.